Good afternoon. You're listening to KMXT 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station here in Kodiak, and it's just about noon, which means that it's just about time for the noon news. Right now, it's mostly cloudy conditions here in Kodiak, 47 degrees Fahrenheit today, a 40% chance of showers, mainly before 4 p.m. Mostly cloudy with a high near 47 degrees, a northeast wind of 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, a 10% chance of showers before 7 p.m. Mostly cloudy with a low around 39, a calm wind becoming west around 5 miles per hour after midnight. It's a mixed bag for the weekend. Saturday, mostly cloudy, then gradually becoming sunny with a high near 53 degrees, a west wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour. Saturday night, mostly clear with a low around 38 degrees, a west wind around 15 miles per hour. Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 50, a west wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour. Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low around 38 degrees, a west wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour, increasing to 15 to 20 miles per hour after midnight. Looking ahead to next week, Monday, partly sunny conditions with a high near 49. Monday night, partly cloudy with a low around 38. Tuesday, sunny with a high near 51. Tuesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 41. And for Wednesday, partly sunny with a high near 54 degrees. Coming up on the local news, a bit about Kodiak Special Olympics powerlifting, the graduation of Kodiak College, and an update on cruise ships and the ferry.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. New Mexico is preparing for the possibility of extremely critical fire weather conditions in the coming hours. Under high winds and high temperatures, several fires that, according to the National Interagency Fire Center, have burned a combined 295,000 acres could get bigger. At more than 168,000 acres, the Calf Canyon fire is the single biggest in the United States. Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham is appealing to residents in the path of the fires in New Mexico to evacuate, warning that starting tomorrow morning, there will be 100 straight hours of red flag conditions.
100 hours of wind and extreme temperatures is extremely concerning.
Scientists say wildfire seasons are getting longer and more ferocious because of extreme weather conditions fueled by climate change. Consequential wins today for Republicans. In Georgia, a judge says Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene should remain on the ballot. A small group of voters filed a formal challenge to her candidacy, saying she encouraged the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol last year. Here's WABE's Sam Greenglass.
The decision by a state judge says the plaintiffs failed to prove that Greene engaged in insurrection. They had asked the state to disqualify Greene from running, citing a provision in the Constitution that forbids members of Congress who support an insurrection from serving in office. Greene testified under oath last month, answering many questions about the days leading up to January 6th with, "I don't recall." Now it's up to Georgia's Secretary of State to decide whether to follow the judge's recommendation. There's no indication he won't. The plaintiffs could try to appeal the ruling, but it's unlikely she'll be knocked off the ballot. For NPR News, I'm Sam Greenglass in Atlanta.
In Florida, federal appeals courts reinstating portions of a state voting law that a lower court judge ruled discriminatory against black voters. An Alabama federal judge is hearing evidence for a second day on whether to block a state law that would ban gender-affirming medical treatments for transgender youth. Here's NPR's Debbie Elliott.
Lawyers for Alabama are presenting expert witnesses who question the consensus among key medical groups that gender-affirming medicines, including puberty blockers and hormone therapy, are an accepted standard of care for transgender youth. Toronto psychologist James Cantor testified that a majority of youth diagnosed with gender dysphoria later desist and identify with the sex they were assigned at birth. Families of transgender youth and the U.S. Justice Department are asking a federal judge to stop enforcement of the law, arguing it will do irreparable harm to transgender youth. Alabama's law would criminalize gender-affirming medical treatments or surgeries for anyone under 19. Debbie Elliott, NPR News, Montgomery.
This is NPR News.
A group of champion powerlifters have started training for this summer's Special Olympics. The powerlifting event kicks off what will be a busy competition schedule for the athletes. KMXT brings you this report. 70 athletes from Alaska will be participating in this summer's Special Olympics, and they still have a few weeks to go. The games start on June 5th. Kodiak Special Olympics powerlifting coach Lindsay Knight owns Kodiak Athletic Club. He's been meeting with his team twice weekly at his gym to prepare them for the upcoming event.
It's in Orlando, and it's at the Disney Resorts. So we're going to be powerlifting at the ESPN Sports Center. It's going to be amazing.
Six powerlifters from Kodiak train with Knight, and several of his athletes have taken home medals in previous years at National Special Olympics powerlifting events. The team is hoping for more this year. After the national competition in Orlando, the team heads back to Alaska for the state's Special Olympics powerlifting event. Knight says he and his athletes are going to be busy.
I'll worry about the state team when I've learned to just do one contest at a time, so right now we're focused on USA. But no, we'll do pretty good.
According to Knight, the best way to support the Kodiak Special Olympics team is to donate. Torch runs around the state take place in late May and raise money for the Special Olympics teams in the communities in which they're hosted. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard. This weekend, Kodiak College will hold its first in-person graduation ceremony since 2019, before the pandemic. The school is holding two commencements for graduates and their families on Saturday. An earlier ceremony for graduates in the school's workforce development program or visiting from other University of Alaska campuses will be held at 11 a.m. All other Kodiak College graduates will collect their diplomas during a 3 p.m. commencement. An administrator for Kodiak College said about 40 students will walk in Saturday's graduation ceremonies. Both will be held at the Kodiak Harbor Convention Center in downtown. Nine large and small cruise ships are now set to call in Kodiak this summer, according to Alaska Maritime Agencies. That's six less than were originally scheduled when the agency put out its cruise call list for Kodiak Island earlier this spring. This year's cruise season will now begin in mid-July, when the more than 500-passenger Roald Amundsen calls in Kodiak. The island will see its last cruise ship of the season on October 6th, according to the latest schedule. The first Alaska Marine Highway System ferry since January arrived in Kodiak last weekend. The MV Kennecott returned to port in Kodiak on Sunday after a series of delays during overhaul work at the shipyard. By Monday morning, it had departed the city of Kodiak's port on its way to Whittier. The Kennecott is next scheduled to return to Kodiak on May 13th when it ports in Yuzinki and the city of Kodiak. The Tustamina, which also regularly provides ferry service to the island, is still in the shipyard undergoing repairs and will not return to Kodiak until mid-July at the earliest, according to the Alaska Department of Transportation. Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson is asking the city clerk for a long list of records tied to the 2022 municipal election. He says it's in response to complaints he received from election observers and will help improve election security in the future. But some are questioning why the city should spend more time on a closely watched election that's already been decided. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan has more.
Bronson submitted the six-page request last Friday. His inquiry follows complaints from election observers of conservative candidates who Bronson supported and who largely lost in the election. And it comes amid a nationwide trend of conservatives questioning election results in the wake of former President Donald Trump's defeat in 2020. Already, the Anchorage Clerk's Office has responded to dozens of questions and complaints about the recent election, including several about a technician servicing a voting machine during ballot counting. The city's Election Commission called any concerns with the election, quote, fairly minor in a report. Lauren Lehman is the vice chair of the commission and was appointed by Bronson.
You know, if he can ask the questions, he's going to get the same answers that we got, I think.
A written statement sent by Bronson's spokesperson, Corey Ellen Young, said the request would help improve future election security and public trust. In bold at the bottom of each page of Bronson's request, it says, quote, disclaimer, Mayor Bronson and his administration are not questioning the results of the election, end quote. But downtown assembly member Chris Constant says that's disingenuous, and he thinks the mayor's request is a cynical political move that promotes unfounded allegations about election fraud.
The election commission certified the election, seeing no problem with it. So again, it's this big fake news machine supporting the big lie. This is Dave Bronson doing Donald Trump's work in Anchorage, Alaska.
Among the records Bronson is asking for are emails, text messages, and other notes. Plus, he wants the clerk's office to answer a list of questions about the delivery of ballots, election staffing, and what kind of pens and markers the scanning software identifies. He says his office will pay for an out-of-state third-party company to do an audit of the city's election technology. Jamie Hines is acting deputy clerk of elections. She says the clerk's office is still evaluating the request and will need to consult with attorneys.
We take public records requests very seriously, and it's the vast size of this request is just going to take us some time to determine the method and timeline and the scope of the response.
The mayor's office did not respond to further questions about the nature of the audit or how it intends to pay for it. Bronson has previously been critical of the city's election process and has proposed turning the city clerk's position into an elected office. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Lex Trinan.
A bone marrow transplant is a life-saving procedure for people with blood illnesses or cancers. But for Alaska Native and mixed-race people, it's harder to find matches because they're underrepresented in the donor database. As Claire Strimple reports for KTOO, advocates are hosting a drive next week to connect an Anchorage 6-year-old with a matching donor.
It's been almost a year since Tasha Newbill found out her 6-year-old son, Tiberius, has cancer. It was the week after his last day of preschool. She got his results in the afternoon and was on a medevac flight less than an hour later. You can't get the care he needs in Alaska.
I talked to a social worker for 10 minutes, and by 3 o'clock, we were in an ambulance on the way to Anchorage Airport. And by 3:30, we were wheels up on our way to Seattle, and we've been here ever since. So we literally walked out of our life with 10 minutes notice.
Since then, he's had more than 100 transfusions. He's gone through a lot of chemotherapy. His mom says he's also careened around the hospital halls on a quad bike at high speed and collected a lot of Yoda stuffed animals. And after an experimental stem cell transplant, he had a brief remission, but relapsed this February. So now the family is hoping to find a donor for another transplant. It's harder for Tiberius to find a match than it is for other patients. He's Black, white, and Inupiaq.
Most oftentimes people find donors of the same ethnic heritage as you, and with Tiberius being such a unique mixture, there's no one on the registry for him. And there's currently 4.1 million donors registered worldwide, and there was no one who matched Tiberius.
Alaska Native people make up less than 1% of donors. Newbill and her husband are only a half match for Tiberius. Most people who need a transplant don't match perfectly with their relatives, which is part of why there's a donor registry. Christy Youngblood is hosting a donor drive in Anchorage next Monday.
Well, to join the registry, you have to be 18 to 40 years old, meet the health guidelines, and be committed to saving anyone's life.
She's a lymphoma survivor herself. Now she's a volunteer with Be the Match, a nonprofit that connects patients with donors. To get tested, all you need is an oral swab. She says being a donor is also pretty simple. Most of the time, all you donate is stem cells. Youngblood compared the process to donating blood or plasma. Less than 20% of the time, they need actual bone marrow.
And it's not as bad as it sounds. They surgically remove it from your hip, and it kind of feels like you fell on the ice. You're back to normal activities within a day.
The group is hoping to find a match for Tiberius. And his mom, Tasha, wants to boost the number of donors for other patients who need blood that's underrepresented in the registry.
It's really important we get people who are minorities or are multi-ethnic to join the registry because, you know, we are becoming more and more common in this day and age. I'd like to think and believe that society is changing and is becoming more accepted of interracial marriages and children. And, you know, I like to think of Tiberius as the future.
Tiberius just started a month's worth of chemotherapy to reduce his cancer to get ready for the stem cell transplant, if his family can find a donor. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strimple for KTOO.
Ketchikan's borough mayor pledged on Monday to veto a roughly $1,600 grant to a local nonprofit organization focused on providing education and support to LGBTQ people. Ketchikan's Borough Assembly greenlit a wide range of grants to nonprofit community organizations on Monday in a package totaling nearly $390,000. KRBD's Eric Stone reports.
The Ketchikan Pride Alliance told the borough's grant committee that it hoped to use the money to hold events, create a website, and gather data on Ketchikan's LGBTQ community. But Borough Mayor Rodney Dial said he was concerned that by granting money to the organization, the borough would be funding a political cause.
We're now taking and funding a new organization that a lot of people in this community would not want us spending our tax money supporting what they see as a social justice issue. And so I felt that it was a divisive thing for our community.
Ketchikan Pride Alliance Vice President J.D. Martin said in an interview that the grant would fund three events, the organization's annual Pride Picnic in late June, plus two other outings yet to be determined, though at this point she says the group is not planning a parade. Martin takes issue with Dial's claim that the group is inherently political. She says the nonprofit's 501c3 status under the federal tax code prohibits it from weighing in on political issues.
Nothing that we produce is political in nature. And that's also very intentional on our part. We think the idea that LGBT people and our identities are inherently political is not correct. We are just people.
Martin says LGBTQ people come from a variety of backgrounds and hold a wide range of political beliefs. The package of nonprofit grants passed Ketchikan's assembly 6-0. A 5-member supermajority of the assembly could override Dial's veto. The Ketchikan Borough's Grants Committee, made up of 2 assembly members and 3 residents, received applications for more than $500,000 in community organization funding. The committee recommended holding funding flat for organizations that had previously received borough money and funding most new applications at 50% of the requested amount. Assemblymember Jamie Palmer, who sits on the grant committee, defended the Ketchikan Pride Alliance grant.
For the Pride Alliance, the idea of the borough's strategic plan, including quality of life for all citizens on this island, and they met the requirement of education and wanting to have outreach events, and so that's where the thinking was there.
Assemblymember Jeremy Bynum was the only member of the assembly who indicated he would support removing Pride Alliance funding from the borough's budget. Dial has used his veto power sparingly since he was elected in 2019, but it's not the first time the borough mayor has objected to issues involving the LGBTQ community. He vetoed a non-binding resolution in 2020 asking the Alaska legislature to include gender identity and sexual orientation in the state's non-discrimination statute. The assembly later overrode that veto. In other business, Ketchikan's assembly voted 5-1 to fund all but approximately $350,000 of the school district's budget request. Ketchikan's school board had asked for $1.1 million more in borough funding than the previous year to pay down a deficit in its self-funded health insurance program. Bynum was the lone vote against the school district's budget. He said he wasn't convinced the school district had done enough to stabilize its insurance fund.
This is pretty straightforward and simple in my book. If you want to run a health insurance plan and you don't want to go out and go on the market for it, you run it like a health insurance plan. That means that when costs go up, you raise premiums.
Assemblymember David Landis floated the reduced figure as a compromise.
It seems to me that some happy medium is what we're looking for.
The reduction in funding allowed the assembly to pass the school district's budget without a supermajority vote. The remainder of the borough's budget passed unanimously. It'll come back for a final vote May 16th. Finally, the assembly voted to double the mayor's monthly pay to $1,000 and raise the assembly's monthly stipends from $150 to $350. The new pay plan also doubles the per-meeting pay for assembly members to $150. The increase in pay for the mayor passed 5-1 with Palmer opposed. The assembly was evenly divided on increasing its own pay, with Palmer, Bynum, and Assemblymember Judith McQuery voting against. Dial cast the tie-breaking vote in favor. That measure also comes back for a public hearing May 16th. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the art of all things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
As with all great inventions, it becomes difficult to even remember a world in which they didn't exist. Ziploc bags are the perfect example of this phenomenon. Although they have only been around for slightly more than half a century, you find them everywhere now. But where did they come from? And how did they evolve into the range of products we know and use today? In 1951, an inventor named Borgum Madsen applied for a patent for a plastic slide fastener, which was the precursor of today's familiar Ziploc bag. The same year, a company called FlexiGrip was founded with the intention of developing and marketing a product based on Madsen's invention, whose patents it had purchased.
A major leap in the evolution of the Ziploc bag came in 1959 when Austinit found out about a Japanese company which had developed a new manufacturing process that allowed the zipper profiles to be extruded into the polyethylene. This innovation cut the manufacturing expenses in half. And now the familiar Ziploc consumer brand was launched in 1968. It took a few years for the product to really catch on, but by the early 1970s, the Ziploc brand bag was becoming immensely popular and was being used by consumers for everything, from storing sandwiches for school lunches to transporting goldfish home from the pet store. Dow Chemical eventually sold the rights of their Dow brands, including Ziploc, to SC Johnson Company in 1997. Over the years, other consumer brands started to enter the market under the names of Hefty, Gladlock, and various other private label store brands. However, the Ziploc brand remains the largest and most well-known of all consumer brand Ziploc bags. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries.
Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Do you need to see a doctor, dentist, or optometrist? Arctic Care is offering no-cost medical, dental, optometry, and veterinary services to anyone in the Kodiak community May 4th through May 13th. To learn more about the services available through Arctic Care, the location of services, and to schedule an appointment, go to kodiakhealthcare.org or call 907-486-9870. Arctic Care 2022 is a no-cost healthcare service program provided by the United States Department of Defense Arctic Care Innovative Readiness Training Program in partnership with Kodiak Area Native Association.
Well, good afternoon. It's time for the Island Messenger. Today is Friday, the 6th of May in this year of 2022. The sun rose today at 6:05. It will set tonight at 10:08 and rise again tomorrow at 6:03. That's a total of 16 hours, 3 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 29 seconds, record high 69 degrees in 2004, record low 26 degrees in 1920. For Kodiak District Tides, there was a low tide at 12:22 p.m. of 0.5 feet. There will be a high tide at 7:07 p.m. of 5.5 feet, and a low tide at 11:55 p.m. of 3.8 feet. For West Side Tides, there will be a low tide at 12:40 p.m. of 0.9 feet, and a high tide at 7:15 p.m. of 9.4 feet, and a low tide at 12:28 a.m. of 5.8 feet. Looking to marine weather, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, a small craft advisory Saturday today, a northeast wind of 15 knots, seas to 4 feet. Tonight, a northeast wind of 15 knots, seas to 4 feet. Saturday, a west wind of 15 knots, increasing to 25 knots in the afternoon, seas to 6 feet. Saturday night, a west wind of 25 knots, seas to 7 feet. And for Sunday, a west wind of 35 knots, seas to 8 feet. And Monday through Tuesday, a northwest wind of 30 knots, seas to 8 feet. Looking over to the Shelikof, small craft advisory Saturday today, a northeast wind of 20 knots, seas to 3 feet. Tonight, a variable wind of 10 knots, becoming southwest 15 knots after midnight, seas to 3 feet. Saturday, a west wind of 25 knots, seas to 5 feet. Saturday night, a west wind of 25 knots, seas to 5 feet. And Sunday through Monday, a west wind of 30 knots, seas to 7 feet. And Tuesday, a west wind of 25 knots, seas to 6 feet. On to some community announcements. Kodiak Community Cleanup Day is tomorrow, Saturday, May 7th. Stop by the high school parking lot between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. to get your bags, then drop off your filled bags back at the high school parking lot in the provided dumpsters. Please do not leave filled bags on the side of the road. Then come and enjoy a free hot dog lunch provided by the Kodiak Lions Club with cookies, chips, and water. Household hazardous waste, household electronic waste, and recyclables will be accepted. No commercial waste will be accepted. Nick's Auto and Salvage Yard will be accepting residential metals, clean with no oils, free of charge for the whole day in the flats. The Kodiak Chamber of Commerce, Lesnoy, and Matson proudly sponsor this event with support from Kodiak Lions Club, Cost Savers, Subway, Walmart, Threshold, Alaska Waste, U.S. Foods, and the City of Kodiak and Kodiak Island Borough. Help keep Kodiak clean and green on May 7th. The City Port and Harbors Advisory Board will hold a meeting on Friday, May 6th at 12 p.m. in the Fisherman's Hall that has been ongoing for 24 minutes. The meeting is open to the public. Agendas and meeting packets are available online at the city website, and the meeting will be web-streamed at cityofkodiak.civicweb.net/portal. To request paper copies of the packet or for additional information, call the City Harbor Department at 486-8080. PSAs for the Kodiak Public Library for the week of May 2nd to May 7th. Wednesdays at 3:30 p.m., the library hosts a Lego club. This is a drop-in program for youth after school. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Saturday, May 7th, that is tomorrow, at 10 a.m., Miss Annie and volunteers are painting the library's sidewalk for summer. Volunteers are welcome to stop by and help. Also on Saturday, May 7th, tomorrow at 1 p.m., Judy Kidder, local apiarist, will lead a workshop on rendering beeswax. Judy will demonstrate the process and explain its many benefits. Space is limited to 20 people. Please call the library at 486-8686 to register by Friday. Do you know Hoopla? Thanks to a grant from the Institute for Museums and Library Services, Kodiak Public Library offers Hoopla, a digital multimedia service. You can borrow a variety of media, all with your library card. Stream or download up to 7 items each month. Check it out at hoopladigital.com. The library is open from 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday and Saturday. The Kodiak Lions is having the Stand By Me fundraiser for Mother's Day, raising funds to support mothers and children refugees of Ukraine. May 8th, 5 to 8 p.m. in the Gerald C. Auditorium, live on Facebook. 100% goes to supporting Ukrainian refugees. It's a live concert, silent auction, and donation, and bidding opens from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Chiniak school students and their teachers and volunteers gathered beach garbage and created marine debris flowers. These original works of art are on display at Kodiak's new plant nursery, Rooted, where strawberry fields used to be. Open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. Come by and enjoy and contemplate where it all comes from. The Parks and Recreation Advisory Board will hold a meeting on Tuesday, May 10th of 2022. The meeting will begin at 12 p.m. at the Baranoff Park office at 1222 Chichinoff Street. The meeting is open to the public. For additional information, call the Parks and Recreation office at 486-8670. There is a blood drive in Kodiak community at the Alaska Army National Guard Building, 125 Powell Avenue, Kodiak, a.k.a. 99615, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Thursday, May 26th through Monday, May 30th. Schedule your appointment with Tara Cup at 907-654-9419. Eat well, stay hydrated, and bring photo ID. The Kodiak City Council will hold a work session on Tuesday, May 10th of 2022. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. The meeting is open to the public. Public members are encouraged to tune in to KMXT 100.1 FM, the radio station to which you are currently listening. The meeting will be web-streamed, and the web-streaming link and meeting packets are available online at cityofkodiak.civicweb.net/portal/meeting-type-list.aspx. For those who wish to request printed meeting materials or have questions regarding the meeting, please contact the clerk's office at 486-8636. The Kodiak City Council will hold a regular council meeting on Thursday, May 12th of 2022. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. Members of the listening public are encouraged to tune in here to KMXT 100.1 FM, where it will be web-streamed, and the web-streaming link and meeting packets are available at cityofkodiak.civicweb.net/portal/meeting-type-list.aspx. For those who wish to have printed meeting materials or have questions regarding the meeting, contact the clerk's office at 486-8636. Are you looking for something to do in Kodiak? Do you want to see Kodiak through a new artistic lens, full of adventure and appreciation? After a long closure due to the pandemic, the Kodiak History Museum is open and debuting a new show titled Kodiak Collective in its temporary gallery on April 30th. The show features a collection of broadsides created by Natasha Zahn Priestess and Sarah Lowen. Stop by the Kodiak History Museum between April 30th and June 7th. Check out this show that explores the natural beauty, history, and circular nature of life in the Kodiak Archipelago. The Kodiak History Museum is relaunching their temporary exhibit program, and they are looking for proposals for future exhibits. Is there a story that you think is not talked about enough? Is there a topic or issue that you want to explore? KHM is accepting exhibit proposals for their new exhibit opening in August of 2022. Proposals must be submitted by May 1st. I guess that period has passed. For more information on how to propose an exhibit, contact Lynn Walker, the curator, at curator@kodiakhistorymuseum.org or visit KHM's website, www.kodiakhistorymuseum.org.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.